Devices Radio Network.
Blood, Sweat, and Gear is for informational and educational purposes only. Kids, don't try this at home.
I like the AC/DC and ZZ Top. Well, Cephas, Beasties, and the Kings of Rock. Skinner, Seeger, Limp, Korn, the Stones. David Allen Coe with No Show Jones. Yeah! Pass that bottle around. Got the rock from Detroit, soul from Motown. The underground stone, fucking pimp. With tracks that Mac can slap back the whack. Never gain away.
Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear. I'm Scott McNally. As always, with S2H and Skip Hill. What's up, guys? Skip, are you moved in now? What's going on?
Yeah, but due to the pre-show antics, you know that I'm pissed off because my microphone isn't working, and I think it's going to sound like shit.
Hey, I think that's a great attention. Let's bring attention to all the negative stuff so that everybody else notices it and that they can hate the show too. I like that idea.
Misery loves company. I'd like to bring everybody else down. No, it's not a Florida issue. I'm happy to be here. Things are going relatively well. but I'm having problems. These little things make me anxious, and I want to get back into my rhythm. I want to get back into, you know, normalcy, and then I run across these things and it irritates me.
Bro, all you need are your 6 meals a day and to hit some heavy iron and to take some gear, and that's all you need in your life and you're set.
The gym has helped tremendously. As soon as I got back, I'm very anxious when I'm not in my typical, when I'm not familiar. I'm not familiar with my surroundings here, even though I like it. And it's exciting and everything is cool and things are going relatively well, but I don't know where I'm going.
Yeah.
The lack of familiarity, especially I think when you get older, you know, even when I'm in Colorado, I was there for 21 years. I know those roads like the back of my hand. I know how the road dips. I know what lane to be in. I know what lane not to be in. And you take those things for granted a little bit, I think.
Sure.
And then here I can't get anywhere. I couldn't even get to the gym without Jeep or home from the gym. Without GPS, it took me 3 or 4 times going to the gym, and it's 6 minutes away, for Christ's sake. Well, I know, right?
You've got all those extra red blood cells right now from being at elevation. I think you need to get in the gym and work extra hard for right now. Make sure you make use of that stuff.
Down.
Well, that's why you got to get in there, man. You got to get in there and make use of them.
I'm going to tell you, it is noticeable. It is obvious. In between sets of legs the other day, I'm like, oh my God, I could go with like a minute or 45 seconds of recovery. I'm just ready to go again. It is very, very obvious.
Nice. It's like EQ or something, huh?
But yeah, without the EQ. It's just kind of like having all this extra oxygen. And that, matter of fact, my legs were crippled sore because I was able to recover between sets so much faster. Now, that's going to go because, of course, over 30 to 45 days, my blood will adjust again. But in the meantime, I'm going to enjoy it.
Nice. So let's bring Scott in the show here. Scott, when are we moving you out to Florida? You're next.
Not anytime soon.
No?
I go out there every once in a while, though, not far from where Skip's at. And we can probably put thongs on and go down to the beach together and hang out.
You can meet his cat, finally.
No. Yeah, no, he's not meeting my cat. I had a long discussion with Zuri, and she's not interested.
So what's up with you, Scott? What have you been up to, man?
Same old, same old. Just doing yard work yesterday. It was like 70 here.
Whew, that's got to be nice.
I was sweating.
I've been able to count the degrees here on one hand lately.
Well, it was super cold here about a week or so ago.
Damn right it was. When I drove through there, it was ice cold.
No kidding.
It was about 20 degrees.
Huh. Yeah, that's nuts. Skip, you were driving through there at that time?
Yeah, we took the southern route because the United States was so cold. We were concerned about potential weather, snow, things like that. And we had 4 vehicles, so we were kind of had this Colorado caravan. And we went down to Dallas and went over from Dallas, which is kind of cool because I've never been to Louisiana or Alabama or where else did we go through? Mississippi. Hmm. So it was kind of cool. It was kind of cool to see those places. Not that they looked, you know, all that different, but it didn't get out of the 30s. It took us 3 full days to drive it. And I mean,
through Texas.
That's That's pretty rough. Yeah, just Texas alone, exactly. But it didn't get out of the 30s until we got south of Tampa, Florida.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty damn cold the entire time. And I kept asking people at the gas stations, I'm like, this isn't your normal weather, right? And they're sit there. You would have thought they were in the middle of a blizzard when it was 38 degrees. It was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a very, very big, large, long cold spell for damn near everybody in the country, except maybe southern Florida. And it was only 60 or high 50s when we got here.
And what are you looking at now? What's an average day like in the winter over there?
70s.
Oof.
Low to mid 70s. If it gets up to 80, that's not always that common. But it is really an awesome. You know, I come out of the grocery store last night at 10 o'clock, and I'm in shorts and a t-shirt. It's a little breezy, but it feels great. It's pretty badass. That part is going to be and has been very easy to adjust to.
Are you riding your bike?
They won't get here until this next weekend. We're all excited because we got the email confirmation today that they'll arrive at some point between Friday and Sunday. So we're hoping more like Friday so we can ride this next weekend because there's going to be high 70s next weekend.
Okay, nice. Well, we should.
You're going to sit in traffic.
Well, I got to get out of the traffic. The traffic here is horrible. Let me just tell you, and I mean, I got plenty to talk about. I'll try not to get going too much, but I've driven in a lot of shitty places. I've driven in Chicago. I've driven in L.A. I still say that Chicago is the absolute worst.
You've been to Detroit.
I've been to Detroit, too. They drive angry in Chicago, though.
Yeah.
Here, they're not angry. They just drive so fucking fast and crazy. They don't use. And I know it sounds cliche. Everybody says, oh, they don't use turn signals. Let me tell you something. If you live in Colorado, I don't want to hear you complain about the traffic because it is nothing like it is here. You better have patience. I swear some of these lights are 3 fucking minutes long.
Mm.
It's just crazy. I will not ride my bike in this town. I got to get out of this town. And because I live downtown, that's kind of a bitch. But I'm not riding here. I'm not riding to the fucking gym. I'm getting the hell out of this town to ride because it is fucking dangerous.
Hmm. Do you have to wear helmets in Florida?
No.
Yeah. Do you choose to wear one or no?
No, absolutely not. I used to when I rode super sports. That's different because you're the way you ride and shit like that. And I used to ride in the city. If I was forced to ride in the city here, I probably would wear a helmet. I might not even ride. The answer, it's really fucking bad. And then you add to the fact that it's bad with a lack of familiarity of where you are. So I'm not looking at the traffic as much as I'm looking at street signs, lights. They just got different shit. They don't have right turn lanes. Like, well, they have right turn lanes, but you can go straight through all of them.
Ooh.
So it's not like you're in the right turn lane, and if you decide to go straight, you run into the fucking curb.
Yeah.
You can just go straight. It's just weird, different shit down here. And everything is northeast, northwest. I live off of northeast 6th Avenue. But 4 blocks away, there's a northwest 6th Avenue. What the fuck? Like, how do you keep track of that shit? So every road is northeast, northwest, southeast, southwest, and it's fucked up. It's like being in Atlanta and everything is called Peach.
Sounds like Florida is not the place to drive. What's it like over there in Texas?
Well, I can do a direct comparison to where he's at because I go down there fairly often, just north of there. Actually, I was just where he's at not too long ago.
But am I right? I'm right.
Yeah, it's the traffic there sucks. I mean, it's awful. On the interstate, it doesn't matter where you go. It's not good. No,
it's fucking bad.
To get probably the most open road you're going to get down there is to go down to the Keys and get past the Upper Keys.
That's a hike from there, isn't it?
Bends out.
That's a hike, though, isn't it?
Well, if you drove it straight and it had to sit in traffic, it's not that bad. But, you know, like going through Miami, you might as well get shot in the head. I mean, it's a...
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the interstate's like 2-3 lanes.
I'm good at finding country roads, though, just for the record. I'll find country roads to ride here.
Go down by Lake Okeechobee.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I got to get inland more. I mean, I know that. I'll tell you what they have in Texas. Tell me if you feel, you probably notice them all the time, but every small town in Texas has a fucking Dairy Queen. Every one of them.
Yeah?
Yeah, every one of them. I've not... I don't think there is a state, and I understand Texas is huge, but humor me. There's not a state in the United States that has more fucking Dairy Queens per town, like in each fucking town, than it doesn't even matter how big it doesn't have to be that big. There's a fucking Dairy Queen in every town.
Yeah, Whataburger is more popular.
They probably sell more burgers at Dairy Queen down there than they do ice cream.
Speaking of food, though, have you found your favorite grocery store yet? Have you found, like, the place where you're going to be doing your shopping?
Yeah, no. I've been cheap because I'm paying a mortgage in Colorado and I'm paying rent and everything down here and the move and all that sort of shit. So and we're getting ready to sell the house.
So
I'm
stop eating?
Walmart.
Walmart?
No, but I'm at Walmart just playing it cheap right now because I don't know my way around. I got lost twice trying to find a goddamn grocery store. It's two blocks away. I'm not kidding. Because it's you like have to go into a residential area.
Yeah.
And it's weird downtown because downtowns build up like with new builds and they push all the poor people out. That's basically the urban development plan for larger cities for the last like 25 years.
Sure.
So they're building up this area and it's really nice. And two blocks away, there's prostitution, drugs. They've got this black guy rides his bike up and down the street. I'm like, why is this motherfucker riding his bike up and down the street? Because he's selling drugs.
Oh, nice. So well, you can get everything then.
Everything. Yeah. I figured I'd stop him, ask him if he had some Tren.
Yeah.
And we'll go from there. Yeah, you know, it's just a little bit different. But this little grocery store here is in the, it's not a little one, it's like a Winn-Dixie, but it's in like a residential area. So all of a sudden you look like you're riding down the street and you're like, God damn, I know that grocery store is here or something. Then all of a sudden it's right there. So it's just different. It's just fucking, now I have found burgers and breakfast, but I could go on for an hour about that. I don't want to do that.
I think Jason Genova lives in the area. When are we going to get a training video for Skip and Jason Genova together?
Is he that weird guy that's a little off?
Well, I'm not going to comment on that, but maybe. I don't want to turn his people against me.
Yeah, well, I don't blame you. But he's in the area, huh?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think he used to work at Publix in that area. The grocery store.
Are you kidding or no, are you serious?
No, I'm serious, yeah.
Oh, because I was told to go to Publix because they have better meat.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. That's where I think Nags goes. Nags lives down there. He's a good guy.
Yeah, I know he's.
Yeah.
Yep. He's a solid dude. Yeah.
And
maybe Jason will ride a bike by you and you'll see him.
Possibly. Well, you know what? I might not recognize. I know who you're talking about because of his, what do I want to call it, online persona, but I never really got into all that. I don't understand the ins and outs. I know a lot of people were irritated at him and then other people were mad at him because they were picking on him because he's special needs or something and they shouldn't have been picking. I don't know. I don't know much. And it was something to do with that. The guy, Rich Piana, I think there was an issue with him. I don't know. Yeah. I can't remember what the hell was going on.
You're probably better off not following all that stuff, but now that you're in the hot bed.
My name is Ken. When I go to the gym, I tell everybody my name is Ken. They don't even know me by Skip. It's fucking awesome.
Man. Really?
Yeah. I'm dead serious.
So
Here's how small the world is. I know one fucking person here, and I'm not kidding. Well, basically one. The girl that was at the gym when I signed up at Titan Gym,
uh-huh.
And she's really, you know, she's kind of nice. She was cute. I was like, oh, this is going to work, and I love the gym and everything. But I don't talk to anybody. I don't get out. I've only been here for about a week now, maybe about 6 days. I'm in the grocery store last night with my wife, and she walks by me.
Yep.
And we're not even close to the gym. I mean, we're close, 6 minutes, I guess, but still. And I'm like, oh, you're the girl from Titan. She's like, yeah, how you doing? I'm like, oh, shit, small world. How the fuck can I not know anybody down here? But I happen upon the one person that I've talked with in the last 6 days, and it happened to be her. I thought that was kind of funny. No,
you're being stalked. That
story. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I doubt by a 25, 26-year-old cute girl. That doesn't usually happen for me.
So tell us about the gyms. I've seen you posting a bunch of different stuff, different gyms you've been checking out. I know you've been to a few now, haven't you?
Yeah, they're small. There's a lot of them, but they're smaller.
Really?
And I kind of like that. I'm cool with that. This the one that I'm in. It might not be, shit, if I'm guessing 6,000 square feet.
Okay.
It's just not that big. Everything is crammed in there together. It reminds me a little bit of Armbrust, but it's got low ceilings and it's got competitor pictures on the wall and stuff. But it's pretty chill. I go in there at 8 o'clock at night. There's only five, maybe six people in there.
Nice.
Yeah, it's kind of cool, but it's only 6 minutes away.
Nice.
And people are busting my balls. Well, no, I don't want to say busting my balls. That's not fair. But University Fitness is where all the meatheads train, and I really would like to train there, but it's over 30 minutes away.
Yeah.
And my wife was like, no, we have this new situation now where we have everything so close, you know, the grocery store, the restaurants, everything. And the gym is only 6 minutes away at Titan. You said you liked it. So I'm like, you know, you're right. Let's train at Titan. I'll run up to University every now and then, especially with the terrible traffic and the way people drive. So having everything close is cool. The gym's seem to be great. They're just smaller than what I'm used to, I guess. But you have a smaller gym with less people, or you have a bigger gym with more people. So pick your poison.
Yeah.
I know somebody that trains at Titan.
Yeah?
Who?
I'll send him over to you one day.
Oh, great. Tell him my name is Ken. I don't want anybody blowing my cover.
Okay.
Yeah, here's the thing, Skip, and I'm going to tell you right now, that's all fine and good. I started going to a new gym a couple months ago. In the first week I was there, I was like, oh, this is great. You know, like you said, man, nobody knows me. I can get in, I can get my workout done, and, you know, it's fun. And then people start to ask questions, and they're like, hey, how do you build your biceps like that, Ken? Exactly. Before you know it, you get talking to them. And then they you know, you say something or somebody else comes in and they're like, hey, there's that guy. He's from that radio show and he's on Elite FTS. And then that guy tells somebody else. And before you know it, you're going to be Skip again in the same scenario in a different town. Just give it 2 months. Mark my word.
Old shampoo commercial. And they tell two friends, Yeah, you know.
For super body, super shine, and super fresh smelling hair, use it every day.
You tell two friends, and they'll tell two friends, and so on, and so on.
Probably. The cool thing is it looks like there are enough competitors in this gym and enough egos. Everybody's cool. It's kind of like a small little family type of atmosphere, you know, but yet you have your I can tell, you know, there's egos and there's competitors and stuff. A few people have, you know, I've been asked if I'm a competitor and stuff like that.
What'd you tell them?
I tell them I'm old and I used to compete.
Okay, so you do
every conversation ever. That way they don't pursue, you know, and ask me what I'm going to do, if I'm going to do shows.
Yeah.
When was the last time you competed? Things like that. It's kind of along the lines of what we were talking about before. If someone asks you if you work out, I just tell them I eat a lot. It just kind of brings the conversation and any future questions to a screeching halt.
If you really wanted to, if they ask you, do you compete? You could have just said no. That would have been
a good point,
you know.
But I still have enough of an ego.
That's what I'm getting at. The ego's going to take you back, Skip. Like, 2 months from now.
Used to. That's what I'm saying. So yeah, and you have to remember too. Even though we're in South Florida, I'm still a tannest motherfucker in the gym.
For now.
Yeah, they're like, where are you from? Or if I say, because I'll have like a Rockies hat on or something like that. You from Colorado? Yeah, but I'm French. I'm still French Polynesian. Yeah. I'm actually from Bora Bora originally.
Yep, I give it 2 months. 2 months and you'll be back to old Skip. You'll be shooting elite videos in there. Everybody's going to know who you are. It's good. It's going to happen, probably. Man.
Well, my wife is my photog and she hasn't been training for like 2 months, so she finally goes back in today, and I was telling her, I'm like, I don't have any videos, I don't have any pictures, you know, I gotta still, you know, put shit out there.
Yeah.
And so I said, I gotta get you back in the gym. Even if you want to be fat and drink beer, you gotta go to the gym because you gotta take pictures and video.
Nice. You got any questions for him, Scott?
No, I know where he lives.
You knew where I lived before. You sent me pictures of the inside of my house 2 days after I was there. That's creepy.
All right.
Just waiting. I'm looking after you.
You're like, I like your fireplace. I'm like, what the fuck? How could you possibly know what my fireplace looks like? The internet. There's a lot of information on the internet. All right. I am selling the house. Hey, if anybody wants a beautiful house in Colorado, I got it for you.
Well, I want to throw it out there. Just, you know, we talked about it a little bit at the very beginning. Skip doesn't have an awesome internet connection today. If we lose him, you know, it is what it is. But nonetheless, we're doing pretty good so far, man. So I think
I will tomorrow. If we can get through today, by tomorrow I'll be hardwired. It's just that weird thing. You know, they can't ever come out in a timely fashion.
Yeah.
So I'll be here tomorrow. If I can fumble through today, I'll have my microphone problem changed. I'll have my internet problem all hooked up. It'll be good.
Nice. Well, guys, let's take a quick commercial break. And then if Skip's still with us when we get back, we'll answer some questions. Yes, I'm on it, I'm on it, with the shotgun. These people ain't seen the Browns game.
The food and fun are all there.
Hang in there, Howie.
You can smile America with Chuck E. Cheese.
If you've enjoyed S2H's contribution to Blood, Sweat, and Gear and would like to learn more, reach out to his team at advancedtrainingtech.com. No matter what your goals are, if you're heading to the pro stage or just want a recomp, feel free to register at advancedtrainingtech.com. Team S2H will be available to educate and inform members as to what plans would best fit their needs, or just hang out and interact at the forums free of charge. That's advancedtrainingtech.com. Team Skip has been synonymous with bodybuilding conditioning for the last two decades. From NFL players to professional bodybuilders to 40-something guys that just want to kill it in the gym and their shirt sleeves. If you have too much skin, call Skip. TeamSkip.com, because skin is overrated. Hey guys, Scott McNally here.
And this is VJ Peary.
You guys know us from here at the Advices Radio Network. Well, we also have another show, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. We've got everything from supplement reviews
to shout-outs,
listener questions,
and of course, our weekly bodybuilding podcast reviews.
So check us out every Friday.
Or whenever you feel like cooking or doing your cardio or basically wasting time with us.
You can hear us at bodybuildingnerds.com.
Also on iTunes. Bodybuilding Nerds, it's time to get nerdy.
All right, guys, and we are back. All three of us made it, as a matter of fact. So we'll cross our fingers and Skip. We're just going to cherish every moment we have with you in case we lose you.
Okay, that's just me. I'm just playing.
All right. So last episode, we had a lot of fun. That was a great show, man. That was a lot of fun. We had the doctor on, and he had a lot of good stuff to say. Thanks for bringing him. That was cool, Skip.
He's a good dude, man. I missed training with him already. He's a really solid, fun dude to hang out with and train with and stuff like that. I'm disappointed that I ran into him closer to the time that we were leaving than sooner in the last 21 years. But he wants to come back on. He had a good time with it. He's a good dude.
Hell yeah, we got a lot of really good feedback on the show too, and I felt like he's like us. He's a talker, you know. So you get a talker on the show, I feel like you can go nonstop. So, guys, if you didn't listen to that episode,
he's fucking just smart though.
Yeah, we're talking about Jacob Laturo, Dr. Jacob Laturo. If you guys didn't listen to that episode, definitely head back and check that one out. We gathered a bunch of questions off Facebook from that episode, and I still have those questions. I saved them. But we also have a bunch of questions that people submitted through the forum. So anybody that wants to take part in the show, and please do, because it's you guys that make this show possible. We can only do the show if we've got your questions. So head over to forum.advicesradio.com, and in the bodybuilding section, there are threads for all the shows, and there's a thread specifically for blood, sweat, and gear. You can add your questions there, and we stay pretty up to date. We get through mostly all of these every episode. This is one I'm not so sure about. I'd be curious to hear if you guys have any experience with this. He says, any merit on cold thermogenesis, i.e. cold vests that people wear to burn calories? And he gave us a link, okay? And I click on this and I look at it. I don't know. It looks like a scam to me personally. But you've got these people wearing vests that bring down your temperature, it looks like. And from what I understand, making your body cold does make you burn more calories. Have you guys ever heard of anybody doing this?
You know, here's what I think, and I'm wondering what Scott's thinking too. On paper, when you break something down like this, there is logic to it. It makes sense in the sense that if you're in a colder climate, the body has to fight to stay warmer to maintain its core body temperature. So there, and it takes more calories to do that. There is truth to that. What happens is, this is how scams make a lot. And I shouldn't call it a scam, but this is how people make a lot of money, because they have this basis or this foundation is to almost to legitify it and make it legit. And then they just run with it and they make a ton of money. And then people figure out that it's just not enough to fucking matter. So will it work? Technically, it works. Is it enough to make a difference and you're going to end up in any different condition or leaner? No. It's just one more thing that will run its course that people will spend money on that in the end isn't going to do a goddamn thing. Now, you have those people, and these are the people who will pay for it, who will say, every little thing matters. Mm-hmm. If I can take 0.5% here and I can get 0.5% over there, eventually, if I get enough 0.5%, I'm going to be up to 5%. And then, okay, spend your money then. But I can tell you, my fucking ass won't spend it. And I'm going to tell my clients and anybody who will listen not to spend their fucking money on that.
So let me ask you then. I've seen a few pictures on you from your contest day, Skip. You never used a cold vest to get in that shape?
Yeah, I have not.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't get in any better condition in the dead of winter than I did in me doing cardio in the cold in my garage at 9,000 feet did not make me any leaner than if I was doing it when I was warm. It just isn't going to. I've heard of people turning on their air conditioning in their car so that they would be cold, because that would help them to get leaner or help their metabolism.
Really?
It's just sometimes we just get too, and it's funny because on the one hand I can say, I can appreciate that you're paying attention to detail. You're leaving no stone unturned. But there comes a point where it becomes ridiculous. And I think because I've spent the years that I have doing this, I still am one of those people who will say, if there's not a true benefit to where you can quantify the benefit over time and it's actually worth it.
Yeah.
Then there's no sense doing it. And I understand there are other people. As an example, Phil Viz, and I don't know that he's for cold vests, but he would argue, like he did on the show, hey, every little thing matters. I'm not knocking that.
Yeah.
I can respect that. I'm just being honest and saying I spent enough time that, to me, there's no sense even wasting the time, in my opinion, thinking about these little minor things that don't do shit, and instead focus on the big shit, the things that actually matter and will make obvious and dramatic changes. Focus on that shit.
You know what we should do is just get one of these and send it over to Scott so that when he's cutting the lawn in the summer, he doesn't overheat.
Yeah, those power lifter guys don't get very lean, though. So come on.
I just meant just to keep them cool.
Oh, definitely. It would probably keep you cool. What is it made of? Like a probably like a cold pack?
I don't even know. I see a guy wearing it. It looks like it could be a series of cold packs. My guess is you store the thing in your freezer. That's just my guess.
Yeah. And it's like gel. It has like gel pockets in it or something that get real cold but don't harden. Yeah. Probably. Yeah.
I'm guessing something like that.
Yeah, it sounds like a, well, for one thing, if I mean, you do burn more calories when your body temperature drops, but it's got to be over a consistent period of time. And generally, and in the most part, unless you, you know, have like a bodiless jacket on that has sleeves and you have real pants on and stuff, I mean, you get cold from your extremities in, not from your core.
Yeah.
I don't see any use in it.
You can get
to me, actually.
You can get the original cold fat burner, which it looks like it kind of straps over your shoulders and back and chest, really. And they also have one called the Cool Gut Buster, which goes around your stomach. And that's only $89.
Send you that one.
Send you that one.
If I was going to do it, I'd do it the right way, and I would just anally insert ice cubes.
Yeah, why not?
I think working from the inside out is probably going to be far more productive than working from the outside in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you could get, like, package deals and spend, like, $160 on these things.
Plus, it could be a new service. I mean, if you want to come visit me in Fort Lauderdale, I could rectally insert ice cubes for you at a nominal fee.
Yeah, plus you can, like, add extra stuff to it, like, you know, extra cold packs and stuff like that. And before you know it, these things are... I am going to use the word scam. I'm totally going to use the word scam on this.
Does it have beer holders in it? It's like a mobile cooler.
All right. I am going to move on here. He says, this guy, he says he also posted this over at Clinical Muscle. He's 24 years old and has been training with weights since the time he was 13. He's 210 to 212 pounds. Standing at 5'9.5". HRT now for 10 months due to low testosterone. He's got a night job, no sleep, and possible misuse of underground sups shut him down. My endo has me doing the Clomid test and run HCG for 6 months prior to try to restart T production, but nothing worked. 225 to 250 milligrams a week, split doses Sunday and Wednesday, test cypionate, brings him to about 1670 total for his test levels, resulting in 65 for free test. Last blood test was 12/18/2017, which I think is very exceptional for this dose, he adds. Estrogen was 20.7. Questions around this posted below. He's using 1 milligram of Arimidex 3 times a week. Says my endo has prescribed 1 milligram of Arimidex every day, but I know that I would crash my estrogen levels. All labs are attached. He says training in a nutshell. He says he's more of a power lifter, trains 5 times a week with cardio daily. He has a desk job. He does 35 minutes of walking on training days, and he'll throw in HIIT cardio on and off to keep some leanness as he approaches the end of a slight deficit phase. Let's see. I'm just going to try to skip down here. Diet is very clean and is based around carb cycling with moderate carbs, 180 to 250 grams on training days, with off days being higher fats and minimal carbs. I'm usually doing the high carb refeed 1 to 2 times a week. It goes up to almost 300 grams. So here's his questions. I've progressively felt worse and worse over the last 6 months, even with TRT and my levels being what they are. Symptoms include absolutely zero sex drive, freshly married and in a good relationship, very lethargic, tired most days, no energy to do things that I used to do, shopping with the wife, family outings, etc. And training is somewhat stagnant. Even after taking a nice deload for a week with zero training and still kept up with the cardio at that time, it has just been that hard to get motivation and to do anything. Even with being in a calorie deficit, I don't think I should feel this bad. I'm not contest prepping or anything. So he says he's probably not dieting too hard. He asks, What do you see from my labs that may throw up a red flag? Is my E-level killing my sex drive and general health? Why is such high testosterone with high free testosterone resulting in these symptoms? Do you see anything in this panel that looks like it's an issue? And just to kind of go over everything that he's got here, once again, his estradiol is 20.7 PG per ml, and that's in a range of about 10 to 39. So it's not, you know, it's not too low, not too high. Testosterone free test is at 51 NG per DL. So that's on a range of 5 to 20. So it's very high. It's way off the charts. And testosterone is 1670 on a range of 240 to 950. He also includes everything else with his metabolic panel with, I see everything for, ALT, AST, BUN, creatinine, and that stuff, sodium, potassium. Anything else you guys would want to know moving forward off of those levels?
RBC's high?
Let me see. I don't think he has RBCs on here.
I would imagine if he doesn't have them, because he's pretty thorough.
Yeah.
If he doesn't have them, probably not out of range. I don't see much of anything there on the panel. Do you, Scott? I mean, the estrogen might be able to come up a little bit, but I wouldn't ever be alarmed if a client came to me with an estrogen level of 20-21. I mean, it's not – some people function differently with estrogen levels where – they can be in good condition, everything be going well, but they do run a little bit low on sex drive unless their estrogen, like some people need their estrogen level to be higher. He could try to back off on the anti-estrogen, but it could even just be outside of blood panels don't tell the whole, you don't know adrenally, you know, what's going on with adrenally. I just made that word up.
But it made sense. I got it.
Yeah. You don't know, too. We don't know, even though he was very thorough with his information, which is impressive because it makes it easier to dissect a problem the more information you have. I don't know that he's just potentially just overtrained or overstressed. I don't know what his life is like. His marriage might be happy, but he could be, I'm happy right now, but I'm stressed out of my fucking mind. So I don't know what his stress levels are. I don't know what his, you know, work environment is. I don't know. Did he mention sleep?
He did say that he believes that his low testosterone levels were related to the stress factors in his life. He says night job, no sleep, and possible previous use of underground supplements. He thinks those were factors that had shut him down. Now, are those things still in his life? I don't know.
Right. What do you think, Scott? What do you see? Do you hear anything that's a red flag on the blood panel? I don't.
Yeah, I do. I mean, his free testosterone is way too low for a 16-something total. So, does he have SHBG on there?
No, he doesn't.
Or his blood proteins?
BCG is 4.5. In the range of
alkaline phosphatitis?
48 out of a range of 32 to 122.
He's got no lifted profile panel, though, right?
Correct.
Did you say he's taking Clomid and HCG with the testosterone?
I was trying to figure that out.
Yeah, too. He initially was.
I would tell him to go get his SHBG check and also ask his doctor if he's looked at his... I mean, at that age, to be shut down,
yeah.
Even if you've used some stuff, that's pretty young. And, I would dig a little deeper into some other areas.
Didn't he say the free test was 65?
Yes.
Yeah, that's low as hell for 16 something. I'm thinking he needs to check his SHBG and see where it's at.
Almost certainly.
It's probably going to be either really high or really low. Most likely really high, though.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
He's probably not getting enough binding to his SHBG, which shuttles a lot of proteins and hormones through the blood, because that free test number is really low. And with an estrogen at 20, whatever it was, 20 or 21, I mean, when you started saying those numbers, you said 16 something and 65, I thought, oh, his estrogen is going to be off the roof, out of the, off the charts.
Yeah.
He needs to get some more thorough blood work than that. You know, that's not, you know, a doctor's going to look at that and go, oh, well, your testosterone's out of the roof. Well, you know, his ratio to free test to total test is not very good. I would, you know, optimally his free test should be 250, 300 or more even.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What can somebody do if they have high SHBG besides, say, you know, adding Proviron or something like that?
Add Proviron?
That's your only option, huh?
There's other ways, but I mean, I think he needs to get a better panel. I mean, this is a base panel, obviously.
Yeah.
Just more in-depth blood work.
So
also, you got to check the lipid profile because his alkaline phosphatase is pretty low. So you got to look at some other things. And, you know, I mean, it's because he's tired and doesn't have much sex drive. I mean, he could have a great, his hematocrit and RBCs could be out of the roof. I don't know.
Yeah.
Possible.
Yeah, you'd have to wonder too. I mean, iron, ferritin, mm-hmm. I don't know. You didn't mention those numbers, I don't think. But like I said, it's difficult to see. I understand he's asking more from the position of blood work, but there are other things that he will have to look at too, because if he very quickly would say, yeah, I do feel kind of overtrained, like, I, you know, I'm run down, like maybe I, you know, because if he's training 6 days a week for 2 hours a day and he's on restricted caloric intake, that's going to be a huge, under a lot of stress at the same time, then, you know, that's going to help answer some questions too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, remember something too, that everyone looks at total test. Total test is a benign number in a way. I mean, he's really getting only the 65 free test, which is barely above out of range. So especially if his free testosterone was a lot higher before and now it's gone way back down, it's like being, you know, it's you know, it's like anything that drops a lot, you're going to feel different. But I would get the SHBG checked. I'll just get more thorough labs, get lipid profile, progesterone, prolactin, you know, all that stuff.
You think it would be worth maybe doing like some thyroid stuff?
No, because I mean, thyroid can play a role. I mean, not make me feel crappy. I mean, I would get your thyroid numbers checked. Yeah, I wouldn't take anything for your thyroid.
That's what I'm saying, yeah, is throw that on there too, because I don't see anything for thyroid values either.
And you get a free T4, a free T3, well, not just TSH, which they stick on your base labs.
Yeah.
Check that all out, see what's going on there. Okay. It could be multiple problems. I mean, it could be a singular thing.
Where would you see his free? If his free testosterone was, throw out a number of what you think, Scott, if he had a free testosterone level that was relatively normal for that total testosterone level, what would you expect it to be? What would you think would be normal?
Unmanipulated?
I mean,
if he'd have been more like 125, 150, I would think that. I mean, 65 immediately stood out to me as low for that total test number. I mean, I've run my free test almost up to close to what my total is. So it's, I think he's got some kind of binding issue because there's something going on. I mean, he's just got to get deeper labs. We're kind of just speculating, but that ratio is not good. It's definitely not optimal.
Hey, Skip, I'm over here at the Facebook questions they posted a couple weeks ago. Buddy Blystone asks about breathing techniques that you touched on in a post.
Well, I know we discussed it on the radio show. Oh, you know what? I may have touched on it in a post prior to the radio show. Okay, what's he asking?
He just asked about it. I don't think we discussed it on the show.
Well, what it was Jake, Dr. Jake, my training partner, when we were training legs that day.
Oh,
he,
those breathing techniques. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's referring to what Dr. Jake called inverted breathing or inverted breathing pattern.
I see.
I wondered about that because we didn't break it down and we didn't detail it too much. Basically, in a nutshell, what I was doing was and I have to preface this so that there's a better understanding of why I was doing it. Since I've had my lower back problems, especially during legs and even sometimes during back too, I have probably subconsciously slowed my repetitions down so that they're more controlled.
Yeah.
So that they're not, you know, it's almost like I'm overcompensating so that they're not jerky, they're not too quick, that sort of thing. As an example, I see Tom Platz come out of the bottom of a squat and I just think to myself, if I did that, I would be laying on the floor with ripped discs and just, I'd be a mess. Anyway,
yeah.
In doing that, I was breathing, I don't want to say at the wrong time, before my descent in, let's just say, a squat, I would breathe, I would inhale, but I couldn't hold that breath. I'd have to breathe again, because if I didn't, I would fucking pass out. So what I would do is I would breathe, and then about two-thirds of the way down, I would take another short breath where I would inhale. And when I inhaled, that's what made my breathing inverted, because when you inhale in a position like that, you're essentially, I was opening my lower back up or my base, like my hips and stuff like that, to the vulnerability. It wasn't what I call a solid base.
I see.
And in doing that, and in taking in more air in that bottom two-thirds of the, I'm guessing roughly two-thirds, three-quarter, because I wasn't breathing in at the very bottom of the squat when I was in the hole, that's what was helping to shift my hips. Because, of course, all the pressure through my, you know, abdomen, and it's intrathecal pressure, basically, intra-abdominal pressure, you know, that you get in that bottom position. So it was making my hips shift, I guess. And what I had to do was I actually had to not only get the breathing right, but I had to get the breathing right, I had to speed up the repetition. And in doing so, it not only gave me more power, and it was hard to do because my confidence, you have to understand, I mean, shitting in the shower, even though it was 3 years ago, while standing up, it sticks with you. So every repetition is like, oh my God, this could be the rep. Oh my God, this could be the rep. It's really difficult to shake. But when he told me visually, I mean, he had his hands on my hips while I was doing, which is, for someone like me, is just, you're in my fucking boundaries. You're in my space, for one. Yeah. Two, I start to overthink everything and be like, okay, am I doing it right? Does he think I'm doing it right? Is this where I blow my fucking back out?
Yeah.
So after that, he said it's night and day. Like when you're breathing. So when I was doing the repetitions quicker, it was actually, and breathing correctly, it was actually more beneficial and making my lower back less vulnerable. And at the same time, I was able to take the amount of weight, because I've always said that my leg training has not been limited by what my legs can do.
Yeah.
My legs have the strength to move more weight. My lower back doesn't, and my brain doesn't, because of my lower back. So this allowed me to not only keep a solid base, but increase my leg poundage, and it built my confidence, because I knew that my base was more solid and I was less vulnerable. I hope I explained that right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And that's and what he busted me for after that was not only to do that and get my breathing right for legs, but also for rowing movements and even little things that you wouldn't think about, even a leg extension. He was busting me there too. He's like,
no kidding.
Practice it and get routine with your breathing through every muscle group, whether it impacts your lower back or not, so that it's consistent and it's routine and it's just like kind of like a learned, repetitive, habitual behavior.
Yeah. Nice.
So that has sped up all my reps, quite frankly.
It's funny, you know, man. It's like such a back to basics thing. You know, we've been doing this for so long, but it makes so much sense.
Well, that was my initial reaction when he told me. I was warming up and I didn't have hardly any weight on there. I'm like, I'm literally looking at him like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I've been doing this for 30 years. Right. I'm pretty sure I know when to fucking breathe. But then it made me think, I'm like, God, see, this is how when you do something for a long period of time, it's not necessarily complacency, but there are things that you just move to the side and go, this is covered.
Yeah.
There's no sense revisiting it.
Yeah.
And that's a huge, huge mistake. It's easy to do, especially for something so mundane or something so, you would think would be so insignificant. It's like I covered that before. It's like learning how to write.
You learned that on day one.
Yeah, I hold my pencil. Exactly. I'm holding my pencil. Like, what the fuck? Does it really matter?
Right.
But it does. Yeah.
All right. Joey Palumbo, I'm going to guess no relation. He asks, does fasted cardio really offer improved fat burning? Where do we want to go with this one, Scott?
I'm going to go with maybe.
Maybe?
Other factors.
What are your other factors involved here?
Well, I mean, obviously it depends on what kind of diet you're on to a degree, but I think it also depends on how you're training, how long a fasted cardio, what your pace is.
Okay.
I've kind of gotten away from fasted cardio. Depending on the person, but mainly it's because people have more compressed time in the day. So yeah. I prefer more like the HIIT type thing. But yeah, some people still do it. And I mean, I have guys do it in the off season just to keep heart health. But I think you can compromise yourself to some degree if you get hauling ass too fast and go too long. So there's kind of a happy medium, but you know, 30 minutes. I just say walk and see, so you can hold a conversation, but you still are a little bit winded.
Okay. So no HIIT cardio for you then in the AM fasted.
No, I usually have people do it post workout.
Okay.
Depends on the person though. Some people get more out of it than others. I personally never got a ton out of it. Other than I spent a lot of time on a treadmill or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's relevant to the person too, as far as how fast their metabolism is. If you have someone that has a really fast metabolism and they need to do a little bit of cardio, you know, that may be effective to in a shorter duration in the morning.
Yeah.
But I've kind of probably steered more away from it than towards it.
Okay. Let me take this question just a little step further for you, Skip. Now, I assume that with your clients, you're working with people that are, you know, competitors and non-competitors. And I'm going to make the assumption here that you do use fasted cardio at times. So is this important, you know, to do fasted cardio in certain circumstances? And if so, is it important for your non-competitors, or can they get away with just doing it post-workout? Do you see where I'm going here? Can you still get in shape and not have to do it? Because Scott brings up a good point, man. We're under a time crunch. All of us are. And I feel like as a coach, I'm going to ask people to do it sometimes, but I want to respect their time too. And I don't want somebody to have to go to the gym twice, you know, like go before work and then come back and train later, you know, unless it's really necessary.
Here's how I look at it. I do believe very, very strongly that fasted cardio is the best way or the most efficient way to do cardio. So how I put it to clients is this, basically just like that. I believe that fasted is the most efficient, that in the end though, it's more important, that much more important that you actually get it done than the optimal time to do it. If you are dotting your I's and crossing your T's, I say that it is far more beneficial to do it fasted. Now, when I say fasted, I need to clarify. It's not necessarily that I believe you have to be fasted in the sense you have absolutely, you don't have food in you. So fasted by definition basically means no food. I get that. But I think I look at fasted more like the lack of carbohydrates. The lack of carbohydrates prior to or after the cardio session.
Hmm.
Okay. And I'll tell you why I feel this way. When you are fully stocked or your glycogen stores are full, you're not depleted. The body fat burning process is not as efficient as when you're glycogen depleted. So that is, to me, kind of the premise for cardio being more effective when you're depleted and you don't have full glycogen stores. If you do cardio with full glycogen stores, you're still increasing your metabolism and you're still burning more calories as a whole than if you, you know, didn't do it at all. So it's not like you're doing cardio and you're wasting it. I think that's what sometimes this argument kind of comes to, like people who say that it doesn't matter when you do it. I think they feel that the people who are pro fasted cardio think that if it's not fasted cardio, then it just doesn't work. I don't subscribe to that.
Yeah.
I just say that it's more efficient. And I use that argument that if you're not glycogen depleted, you're not going to, you know, it's like getting ready for a show. Let's just take cardio out of the equation for a minute. If you're constantly, your glycogen stores are constantly full, I think we can all agree, or most of us, that you're not going to get ridiculously lean, and you're not going to tap into body fat stores as a fuel source if you have glycogen sitting there waiting to be used, especially for something like HIIT cardio, which is why I'm not a huge fan of HIIT cardio. I'm a bigger fan of HIIT cardio if you're depleted, but I still think that HIIT cardio is more of an anaerobic, almost like sprinting, I guess. You're going to burn calories sprinting? Of course, you're going to burn a ton of calories. But I think what it comes down to, the argument at its core for fasted versus non-fasted cardio really is not that it doesn't burn as many calories or enough calories, you know, to speed up your metabolism, but whether it's the most efficient way to do it and whether you tap into body fat stores sooner. That's crossing the anaerobic threshold as an example.
Yeah.
And just to explain that, you know, it's like when you start your cardio and your legs are on fire and you're like, oh my God, I got to do this for a fucking hour. But then you get to the 15 minute point and then you're like, oh, all of a sudden you're on cruise control and you're like, oh my God, I could do this for 2 hours.
Yeah.
That anaerobic threshold is important. If you're depleted, you're going to hit that anaerobic threshold that much sooner. Why? Because your main fuel source isn't going to be glycogen, which is why your legs are burning in the first place. It's going to be more like a predominantly body fat burning type process. So I do think that fasted cardio is important. How do I do it with clients? I tell them, get it done. First and foremost, get cardio done.
Yeah.
But that I believe that fasted, if their schedule will allow it, is more efficient. And in the end, after you are taking into consideration weeks and months, they'll be further along doing fasted cardio than they will if they didn't. I've always stood by that. And I feel like I've seen that in experience over the years. I've done cardio a million different ways myself, but I've also had, you know, thousands and thousands of clients over many years do it different ways too. And that's the conclusion I've come to. I don't use studies for that. I just feel that based on my experience or what I've seen myself and with clients, that that is more effective.
If you get your heart rate up for slow, steady state cardio, let's say you need to be around, we'll say 120, beats a minute. Does it matter if you're on the treadmill or the bike or the elliptical, or just as long as
doesn't
you get your
matter,
heart rate?
The fucking girl.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. As long as your heart rate is elevated, the only time the type of cardio matters is whether it's going to get in the way of your recovery or get in the way of your weight training. As an example, I cannot do a recumbent bike because it will just destroy my legs.
Really?
Because it's like I never cross the anaerobic threshold. It's like someone's holding a blowtorch on my legs the whole time.
Yeah.
So it just depends on that person. It depends on, like, as an example, I won't do stairs close to a leg workout because it's pretty fucking intense.
Yeah.
And another thing that I do too is if I'm doing a lot of cardio, I cut my calf training back because it'll get in the way of my calf training. Plus, if you're depending on the type of cardio you're doing, that cardio can actually feed your calf training. If you're on, as an example, an incline treadmill, and it's pretty good incline, you're getting a lot of fucking calf work, and you're getting it every day. So some people would argue, and they'd say, well, that's not going to create growth for calves. Okay, but then it comes back to the argument, because one argument sets up another argument. Are you really able to increase the size of a muscle during a restricted calorie phase when you're getting ready for a show? My answer is no.
Probably not.
The only way you can really do that is if you're new to training, relatively new to training, or you're one of those guys who does no gear, not even just TRT, but really just no gear throughout your off season, but then all of a sudden you're doing it for a prep phase.
Yeah.
You could then grow during your prep phase to where it may matter. But anytime anybody says, and I'm not going to pick on anybody, I've got an ex-client who I think is an awesome dude, but he's working with a high-level, I call him tier one, prep guy right now, who is telling him, matter-of-factly, that he is bringing up his chest during a prep phase.
Hmm.
And that, to me, I'm not mentioning names or anything else, so I'm being respectful and asking. To me, that's laughable. You cannot tell someone, or shouldn't, they're going to bring up a lagging body part. If they couldn't bring up a lagging body part with that excess and surplus calories off-season and gear, how the fuck are they going to bring it up during a restricted caloric intake when they're trying to get ready for a fucking show and strip body fat? Come on now. Yeah. Really? You know, you can pound it harder, you can hit it harder, but where's your recovery at that point? So that's another argument, like I said. But I do. I believe very, very strongly in fasted carb. And some people say, well, it's just because you're old school. I am old school. But old school isn't always bad. Old school can also say, I've done this a million times backwards and forwards, and I've got years and years and thousands of people worth of experience behind me to set up my opinion as to why I think this is better.
Fair enough.
The old school that's bad, the old school that's bad is when you just lock into something and you don't come back and look at it again.
Hmm.
Like, say, breathing.
Yeah.
I disagree.
I know, that's what I say, and that's cool, because a debate or a topic like this is never really going to be black and white. It's not like someone is going to – I'm not going to be able to say something that's going to go, not only is it not convincing, because people could say, oh, I get what you're saying, and it sounds logical. It's just – there really is no – there's just opinions and positions on the topic. If you do your cardio, you're going to get leaner. We can all agree on that. I'm just arguing – that there's a more efficient way to, and keep in mind, that's me giving that opinion is coming from someone who does not believe in doing the really, really small things that don't count. But I think that fasted cardio counts enough to actually do it, to the point where I will do my cardio first and foremost fasted away from my weight training routine. I will do it. That's number one option. Number two is I'll do it post-workout, because post-workout, you're glycogen depleted. So you're going to cross that anaerobic threshold sooner. And then after that, then it's later in the day away from your cardio where it's not fasted, as long as it's away from carbohydrate. I believe strongly that it means your cardio should be away from carbohydrate. High blood sugar levels during cardio, I think, are not necessarily counterproductive and worthless, but far less efficient. That's why insulin, and I back up the use of insulin, very, very small amounts of insulin prior to cardio, which I will add also Chris Aceto does. And he believes in, I'd be shocked if he didn't believe in fasted cardio, because he believes in low dose insulin prior to cardio sessions. The one feeds the other. He can't possibly believe in pre-cardio insulin use and then not in fasted cardio. It would be counterintuitive.
Hmm. We actually had a question I've been asked a couple of times related to that. What do you guys think about a small amount of insulin pre-fasted cardio? Like 2 units.
Pre-cardio, right?
Pre-fasted cardio, yeah.
Pre-fasted cardio, if you're on a restricted calorie, is... it's potentially, you could go high, depending on how depleted you are, how long the session is.
Yeah.
You're gonna really run into potential hypo problems. And I know, because it has happened myself and with clients. I think that pre-cardio insulin is better in 1 to 2 units if it's not fasted in the morning, if it's later in the day, because remember, even if you don't have carbohydrate in your diet, protein itself is going to increase. It's going to not react as a carbohydrate exactly,
right?
But through gluconeogenesis, if your body needs carbs and glucose, it will convert obviously amino acids to glucose. So I believe that if you're going to use insulin pre-cardio, it's probably better to use it if you're doing cardio later in the day.
Okay.
Versus if you're doing fasted in the morning.
And I assume, we're talking really, really small amounts here.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And people need to understand too, because they might be thinking, oh my God, fasted insulin, higher content. But if you're using 1 to 2 units, I've always said, if you use up to about 4-ish units and you're fasted, your body can adapt to that level of insulin without any food intake. The large majority of the time.
But you probably wouldn't start with 4, right?
No, hell no. And you may actually start to experience hypo symptoms at that dose if you did, and then it would take 10 or 15 minutes for your body to adjust to it.
Okay.
So, you know, there's that. There's other factors. There's a myriad of factors. As an example, if you come off of a skip load or a high carb day and you're doing cardio the next morning fasted, then a couple IUs of insulin can help you to get, you know, in more of a fasted state and bring down blood sugar, you know, blood sugar levels too. So there are other factors that play into it. But like, as an example, because I skip load and I have my clients skip load, if we're talking about they skip load on a Sunday and you're doing cardio fasted on a Thursday or Friday morning,
yeah,
and you do a couple IUs of insulin prior to fasted cardio, you're probably, and the session is longer than 30 minutes or so, it's likely you're going to battle with hypo issues at some point. I mean, everybody has those stories, even without insulin, where they damn near felt like they were going to pass out. Some people do pass out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there are people who passed out during cardio, and they'll just fucking fall over.
Yeah.
So that's what insulin can do to you, even in low dose. If you're already depleted, you're in a restricted caloric environment, and you can hit the floor with or without it.
So, yeah, with all that said, too, definitely everybody, if you're getting any ideas out there, Scott, is that you?
I didn't move.
No, somebody was moving
you
in their chair.
So fucking yeah.
Just be careful, guys. You know, have carbohydrates available if you're getting any ideas in your head.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, insulin, and I've always said this, the veterans are the ones that end up with problems with insulin because they become complacent. They feel the hypo symptoms and then they're like, oh, I'm good. I'll finish what I'm doing. I got to get some carbs.
Yeah.
It's the newbies who are new to it that they're smart enough and they're like, oh shit, I'm hypo. Half the time they're not, but yeah, they feel like they are. And all of a sudden they're throwing down, you know, a package and a half of Oreos. It's not usually the newbie. The newbie fucks up by mismeasuring the insulin dosing.
Yeah.
You know, and I laugh. It's not funny. That's how the newbie makes a mistake. Instead of taking 4 IU or 4 units, they take 40.
Right.
Or instead of taking 2, they take 20. And if you're listening to this and you think that's retarded, I just cannot tell you how many times over the years very smart, intelligent people have made that mistake. It does happen.
Yeah. I'm watching Scott's right mic there, light up. I'm watching Scott's mic light up.
Yeah, it's like at a 10. Everything is bouncing up to a 10 right now. But he's like, I'm not doing anything. I'm just sitting still. No, you're not, Scott. No, you're wrestling with typing paper or something.
I'm going hypo.
If you are and you're going to the floor, you're grabbing everything that you can reach and taking it with you right now.
I got a couple primo questions here for you, Scott. So he wants to give his background too, if it'll help us or not. He's 40 years old. He's been on HRT for a year, 100 milligrams of Pfizer test SIP. Let's see, he brings him up to 900, resulting in a free test of 22. Estrogen is 27. He takes a half of a Rimadex once a week. He's on 1,000 units of Prigal HCG. He does that 8 weeks on, 4 weeks off. He recently added Proviron at 25 milligrams every day, and he will go 4 weeks on, 4 weeks off with that. And now here's his questions. He says, I plan to add Primo to the mix in mid-2018. My goals are purely performance-based and to feel good. So here are his questions. What are your guys' general thoughts on Primo? What have you heard regarding minimum effective dose? What do you think of this compound? Does it need to be run longer, in longer cycles? Is 8 weeks enough? And also he says, am I an idiot and should I consider something else?
Well, did he say what kind of Primo it was?
He didn't mention the brand, no.
I mean, is it oral or?
I'm sure it's going to be injectable.
Yeah, I mean, it's.
Yeah, it's presumptive.
You could run it up to like 300, 400.
Yeah.
You know, I would say it was 100 megs a test.
Yep. Yep. 100 milligrams. And that takes them to 900.
Three or four times that. Yeah. I mean, you know, if it's real,
gotta
roll the dice there. But, yeah, I mean, it's some people like it. I mean, it's pretty effective. Get kind of pricey. I just want to up your test a little bit.
You'd what?
Yeah, it definitely is pricey. I mean, I'll give you that.
Being on that low of a testosterone dose, I would just up your test more.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah, I'm going to throw this out here, and Scott, tell me if you disagree. You're not usually, you know, one to candy coat things. I really do look at, and I understand that this is kind of a, maybe an embellishment a bit, but I always looked at Primo as basically watered down, expensive Deca. I tell guys, if you're going to use Primo, just get more bang for your buck. It won't be as expensive, and just use like NPP or something. I'm not saying they're the same compounds. Don't get me wrong, but to me, I guess I'm saying Primo to me is very watered down. It's very mild. You have to use more of it. I see it more as a female, more effective as a female compound because it is so expensive, because it's not terribly easy to get. And when I say easy to get it, let alone quality Primobolan. It just, to me, is kind of a watered down, weaker version of something you could use to get more bang for your buck. And just like you're saying, I would first go to test. I would just increase testosterone. But maybe that's just kind of an old school way to look at it. I'm glad that Scott agreed on that. Do you see it as kind of watered down, or am I not explaining it maybe the best way that I could?
I don't think that he's going to get as much out of it. You know, bang for the buck, I don't think it's going to be the greatest thing, especially since he's on such a low amount of testosterone, because Primobolan's, you know, primarily has very little androgenic property.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, just might as well, if he's just looking to put some more size on or get a little, you know, a little stronger and stuff, I would just bump the test up, just double it to 200, 300 maybe. It's cheaper. You know, he's already got a prescription. Just do that and roll with that. I think you'll get more out of that.
Yeah, he said performance and feel good. So you think that he'll get more out of that. And they're probably...
He'll have the feel good side for sure.
What about side effects at that dose?
What, 300 milligrams?
Yeah. What should he expect? Is that, I mean, that's not going to be getting, you know, crazy talk, are we? You know, as far as... acne or, you know, any other issues that might come up, estrogen, you know, gyno, things like that. Yeah.
Testosterone.
Yeah. If you were to up that to
1 milligram Arimidex the day after injection, split it 150 on Monday and Thursday, and then probably pop a little half one in on Sunday.
Wait a minute. Are you talking about sides for that dosing of Primo? I thought you were asking about sides for that dosing of Primo. Oh,
no, okay. Test. Because Scott was saying just to, you know, increase the test to maybe 300. And I was just curious, you know, because I'm trying to look at all angles here, and I'm wondering, okay, maybe he's thinking I'm afraid that I'll deal with side effects from test. You know, if you read online, everything says, oh, testosterone's just loaded with side effects and that Primo's a safer alternative. You're not going to get bad things from it, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, 300 milligrams, I felt like, you know, we're still talking low doses of test. I don't think you'd have to deal with a ton, right?
No, I would just go with the test. Just double it up first to 200, and then if you might go to 300. I mean, you're going to feel it. That's going to be a noticeable change for him, even though it's not like a ton.
Yeah.
Then taking a bunch of Primo. I mean, there's people that like Primo. Now, maybe they're using real Primo. That's another thing. But I'd see a purpose in it. I just don't see it in his situation being something that he's really going to get a whole lot out of.
You know,
so just up to test.
The first time that I ran Primo, I had followed what people had said on the boards. I'd been experienced with other compounds, and everybody always said that you have to run Primo really high to get an effect out of it. They said, you know, it's a weaker compound. You got to really up the dose. So I ran like, I think started with 700 or 800 milligrams, and it was too much for me. I started getting acne from it, and I started backing it down, and it felt like I didn't need that much. I kept going down and down, and I ended up right where you guys are saying, like about 300 to 400 milligrams. I thought of real Primo was plenty. Like, there was no reason for me to use any more than that.
Yeah, it depends what you're taking with it too. I mean, like, you know, I just don't see where in logic where the Primo with that low of a testosterone dose, if he's looking to get a little bit bigger, get more energy, feel better, he's going to get more out of upping his testosterone than keeping it where it's at and adding Primo in.
Fair enough.
For his goals.
Hey, Skip, you mentioned that Primo is something that a female might want to consider. What kind of side effects are we talking from this? Now, I know a lot of people consider Anavar to be one of the lowest side effect, you know, compounds for a female to run. Would you say that this is the next one?
Yeah, I think so. And again, you have to be careful with, you know, obviously you got to be careful with the dosing, but, you know, and you get a bunch of different, you know, responses depending on who you ask as far as female dosing, and not only dosing, but the use of what compounds. And as an example, you know, I've been very transparent, very open, saying I think that EQ is in moderate dosing is good for females, and some people don't believe that. And, you know, I guess that's why we do what we do, because people have different opinions on different things, and mine are a little different than most. I think that if you're going to put Anavar with, you have a female and you're going to put Anavar with an injectable, I do think that Anavar and Primo is a pretty solid combination without going, you know, overboard or kind of an OMG type of stacker combination. I do. I think they work quite well together, and it's a good combination. Sides, I mean, you know, with anything, it's hard to say how every specific person, you can't say women react to Primo, all women react this way to Primo, and this is what's going to happen. But I mean, even as an example, a woman could take a small dose of Anavar and not necessarily blow up, but relative to being on nothing, they can all of a sudden gain water weight, where most guys can take Anavar all day and most women, and they're not going to have this blow up effect of holding a bunch of water from Anavar. So I think the better way to say it is guys tend to respond to compounds relatively similarly because of our genetic, you know, hormone makeup. Women can be all over the place.
Yeah.
So you have to be really careful with the compounds and the dosing that women use, because I think there's more of a scattered response across the spectrum when it comes to women and hormones.
Hmm.
I think it's very difficult to say when it comes to women, I guess is a better way to put it. It's very difficult to say this is how women are going to respond.
Yeah.
So I think it becomes much more individual with women than it does with men.
That's because they're male sex hormones.
Exactly. And I think that's what sometimes people miss. And we make these blanket statements that are most times too black and white, not only for guys, but when it comes to women, those sides and those protocols for women are far more gray than with guys.
What
for that reason? For that
so reason. If you figure that 5 milligrams, maybe even 2.5 milligrams of Anavar would be like a minimal effective dose, what are we talking then for a female using Primo?
100 a week.
Yeah, I was going to say 40 twice a week. So I mean, I'm right in there with him. Yeah. 40 to 80 to 100. Yeah. I mean, once you start to get above that, then again, it comes into play too. You know, what division are they? What level of development? What is their past history? How have they responded to compounds in the past? Do they know that they're prone to, you know, sides, whether it be facial hair or voice or
hair loss?
Yeah. Hair loss is, you know, can be an issue with, you know, compounds like Primo as well. So a lot of factors. I mean, that's why if it sounds like I'm not giving a very black and white answer, it's because they're really there's less of a black and white answer when it comes to women and sides than there is with men.
No, I totally get that. And that's why I'm trying to continue to like explore it a little bit, because it is such a gray area. And I think that the more you've said, though, the more I understand there's no single answer, but the more you've talked about it, the more the answer has come out, you know?
Yeah.
I would say this in my experience, which is pretty extensive with females, that prima bone tends to be the, if they're going to experience hair loss, it tends to be, you have a higher percentage of women that have hair loss from prima bone.
From primo, huh?
Than don't. Yeah, I would say the odds are better that you're going to get some hair loss.
Yeah, I would think that's a safe assumption. Yeah. Being but again, PhD, dose dependent, yeah. Right? I mean.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, I'm going to give you just a rough number. 75% of women that take primobolan are going to get some kind of hair loss. I'm not saying they're going to get a high hairline. They're going to go bald. But they'll go to wash their hair and more hair will fall out. That tends to be, voice cracking tends to fall in with primobolan too. On more regular basis.
Where does Winstrel fall in on this? Because I think a lot of times we've got, you know, women that are less experienced and they're thinking to themselves, well, Anavar's worked for me. I've done just great with it. And I want to try something next. But then they think about Primo and it's like, well, I don't want to take shots because that's obviously, you know, you get it in your head that that's going to be a lot more extreme. Winstrel is a lot of times what I've heard people thinking is the next step. But where do you guys put Winstrel on that list as far as like danger goes or potential danger?
I don't think it's that far off from Anavar. It kind of depends if they're doing anything else, because Winstrol actually is a stronger DHT than Anavar, so it'll bind to the SHBG. They'll have higher testosterone levels if they're using some kind of testosterone with it, even if it's a small amount. It's generally not. I wouldn't put it first on the list, but it's okay. It can do the job.
Okay.
Would you put it before Primo, I think, is what Scott's getting at.
Oh, probably Anavar would be the first go-to. Or a little bit.
So are you saying Anavar, Winstrol, and then Primo? Or Anavar, Primo, and then Winstrol?
I'd probably put... Depends on if she doesn't have a lot of issues with hair loss. I'd probably put Primo ahead of it. But I'd probably put testosterone propionate ahead of both of them.
Really?
I know, right? Exactly.
In a small little 10 milligrams twice a week, something like that.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that, because it's such a touchy subject with testosterone, but I think testosterone gets a very bad rap when it comes to female use. And people need to understand, you know, I can speak of this from a menopausal or perimenopausal standpoint, because I first had to learn a lot about this because my wife had a hysterectomy when she was 32 or 33. So that's been about 10 years that I was dealing with it. I think a lot of people might be surprised to know that it is incredibly common for menopausal and perimenopausal women to be prescribed testosterone with their, with their estrogen in situations like that. So you can't just make a blanket statement that testosterone is bad for women. I think they're assuming when they say that the dosing is high.
Yeah, that's and what I think
that
too.
When it comes to testosterone, it's purely dose dependent. And if you can keep these dosages down, women respond incredibly well to testosterone.
Especially if they have no estrogen, because they're either had a hysterectomy or they're postmenopausal. They don't have to take synthetic estrogen. They can just take testosterone. And it accomplishes the same thing, because it's going to aromatize estrogen, which is going to give them the estrogen they need so they're not bottomed out. And then they get their testosterone levels up. I mean, in postmenopausal women, it's very common that they have a testosterone prescription, be it small, but it's very common that they're up there.
Right. And usually that prescription is methylated, which is funny, because it's like, come on. But why do they do that? Because it's oral. And most, middle-aged or older women are not going to take a cream or obviously an injection, which is a very small dose anyway. That's part of the reason it's oral too. But it's still methylated. And I don't think methyl testosterone is rough.
Most of us see cypionate or Cipro mix. in postmenopausal.
But it's not common. I mean, you would agree that that's not usually common when it comes to, you know, if it gets outside of our industry, you know, it's usually oral.
It's pretty common around here.
Yeah?
Yeah. No shit? Yeah. 'Cause I'll say this. I mean, I do have to preface this with, it has been 10 years since my wife was prescribed her, you know, medication. And since then, there's no sense her taking an oral medication when she has access to, you know, other options, I guess you could say.
I'll say that it's prevalent here. So, I find things, if you go outside of the industry, even in the industry, though, too, that things tend to be regionalized a lot of times.
Right.
Maybe in certain areas, there's doctors promoting certain protocols, and they're not in other areas of the country or whatever. But yeah, around here, it's pretty prevalent.
You know, I think we can agree HRT or TRT, you know, 10 years ago, it was a completely different animal when my wife was initially going through this versus now. There's a lot more mainstream. People are much better informed, not just people in general, but even your general practitioners, than they were 10 years ago. So the game certainly has changed. And admittedly, she's not dealing with her hormones through, half the time she doesn't take her estrogen because she doesn't want to, like you said, the smaller kickback of estrogen from the testosterone. Now, if she doesn't train, she's not working out, she's not taking anything, and she doesn't take her estrogen, she gets hot flashes like a 60-year-old woman. And she said it just drives her nuts. I mean, she'll just start sweating, and then 2 minutes later, she's fine again.
Yeah. That's her thyroid.
I don't know if I'm going to entertain or keep the listener's interest talking about my menopausal wife.
And her hot flashes, yeah.
Exactly. They're like, oh, my God. Yeah, so I mean, I understand that. But hormonally, testosterone, coming back to the point that, you know, we got on this topic anyway, testosterone should never be not considered for women, in my opinion. It's just a low dose protocol. And it's so much easier if you're patient. You got to be patient with shit like this. You have to build into those dosages. You don't start high and cut back based on sides with a woman, in my opinion. You start low and you build in. If you're low and you're not seeing the response and they're comfortable with taking that, you know, dose up and experimenting with taking it up a little higher, go up slowly instead of start higher and come down. Holy shit.
Yeah, that sounds smart. Well, guys, we're about out of time, and we are out of questions. We blew through all of them, actually.
Well, I'm glad I made it through, because I need
to go with
my shitty connection and my shitty microphone, and I'll be good to go.
And if you guys can't hear right now what Skip's saying, don't worry, I can't hear either. Apparently, his mic finally died on us, I'm guessing. But he made it all the way through the show.
Better put that dildo in his mouth.
The last minute.
Oh, you're back. You're back. You joined us again.
Yeah, I think, go figure. I had to say something about how, I'm glad I got through, and then I cut out. Anyway, I'm glad I got through it, and for the next show, I'll be good to go. I'll be hardwired again.
Awesome. Hey, I wanted to tell you guys, I've been dealing with this shoulder issue for about since 2013, just bicep tendon type thing going on. I went to an ART therapist the other day, and for the first time in my life, I was able to do chest work without feeling pain. Like the first time since 2013, it like instantly fixed it.
Did you jab the metal bar in your armpit and everything?
No metal bar. She just used her hand. And I mean, it hurt, man. It hurt really bad. But she worked all through like the ribs and then through the pec and my back and the shoulder and everything, bicep, tricep. It was excruciating, man. But it was the first time since 2013 I was able to press without feeling pain in that front delt.
It works.
Yeah, so I am going to go back, and I'll probably talk about that more tomorrow on Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. What do you got going on today, Scott?
Today is check-in day. I don't talk about my clients too much, but I have a new client.
Yeah.
That'll be competing at a national show. He lives out of the country.
Yeah.
They can compete here. And okay. This guy's done well overseas. And I'm not going to give like any predictions, but this guy's got a phenomenal physique.
He looks good, huh?
Yeah. It's nice. Good. Yeah, it's real. It's beyond good.
What
I actually thought he was a pro when I saw pictures of him at first.
What weight class is he in?
Probably be a heavyweight.
Nice. And how tall is he? About
5'6".
So he's a big dude then.
With a little bitty waist.
Nice, man. You got to send me some pictures and keep us updated on that.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I mean, he's got, and the sky's the limit. And he's a normal guy, and he's a hard worker and no issues, which is nice, too.
Hell, yeah. Well, it looks like we lost Skip. I'm not hearing him at all now, are you?
I don't know. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Or oh, no? There he is. We could pretend like we don't hear him.
We go too long, I'll be gone. No, I'm just going to roll through today trying to find my rhythm, trying to get back on track and not on track, but just get finding that rhythm and getting shit done and get my daughter in school and that sort of thing.
Nice. You need to find Jason Genova and shoot some videos with him. That's what we need to see.
I see him riding his bike, I'm swerving at him. I'm just telling you right now.
Hey, now what the other dude's selling on his bike.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's, yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, guys, let's get out of here. For the Advices Radio Network, Blood, Sweat, and Gear, I'm Scott McNally with S2H and Skip Hill, now known as Ken. We'll see you soon.
Radio Network.